Blog Talk Radio.
Right. Give me some straight funk, no chaser, okay? That's the way I like it, and I hope that's the way you like it, because that's the way we do it here, okay? TGIF, God is Friday. This is CHOCLET, your favorite flavor, and you are tuned into Everybody is a Star, live on Tribe Family Channel, all right? Now, two words for you guys, new. Our guest tonight is a musician, producer, performer, teacher, and so, so much more. But foremost, in my opinion, one of the baddest drummers ever. And as busy as he has taken time to come and funk with us tonight on Everybody is a Star. So let's welcome Robin Russell. Hey, greetings, Robin. How are you doing?
Chaplain from the studio, your guest call has dropped, and we are going to reconnect him right now.
Okay.
Robin,
I'm here.
Okay.
Robin.
We had some kind of technical difficulty, so if you are, I was telling people how bad you are and what you do, and you are the baddest drummer, as far as I'm concerned, there ever was. And thank you so much for joining us tonight, Mr. Robin Russell. Greetings.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I feel very blessed to be here, and my spirits are good, so I'm doing okay.
Okay, well, good. Well, we are stoked that you are here with us tonight, okay? And we have been waiting for you, and so I am going to squeeze every bit of information that I can get out of you, sort of like squeezing blood out of a turnip. So I hope you're ready. Are you ready?
I think so.
Okay, good. So we're going to start with, you know, in the beginning, we're going to start with where you were born and raised, and then we're just going to roll on until, you know, we get to the very end. So where do you hail from?
Los Angeles, California.
What? You mean to tell me you were born in Los Angeles?
Born and raised.
Get out of here. There aren't very many of you. You know that, right?
That's right.
Okay. You know. Yep. So now, what school did you go to? I have to make sure that I have the artist shout out their school so people can brag. So what school?
Okay. Well, I'll start with elementary. I went to 59th Street Elementary, then Horseman Junior High School, and I went to Washington High School the first half of the 10th grade, and then they opened Crenshaw High. And I stayed at Crenshaw until graduation.
All right. Well, I was raised in Los Angeles too, not born but raised. And so we were raised like around in the same hood. So I know all about all the schools you just got through saying. As a matter of fact, I went to Dorsey, and of course Dorsey always beat Crenshaw and everything. You know that, right?
Okay.
I just thought I would throw that in.
All okay.
So you just got to agree. Okay, thank you for agreeing with me. That was so nice of you. So listen, let's talk about music and what were your first musical influences?
Well, for me, it all started from listening. It was my parents. My parents, neither one were musicians. And by the way, they both just recently passed, and I'm getting through that. But my mother in particular used to listen to, like, real good music, jazz, like Coltrane and Miles and Cannonball Adderley. And so we would come home from school, and she would be cooking, and we would hear this good music. And it started to build, you know, an ear. And my parents suggested that we take up the saxophone, me and my older brother, because uh-huh. they love the saxophone. So I started out playing saxophone, tenor sax.
I
played
tenor. So your parents suggested, so they were very supportive. What about your dad? What was his musical taste like?
He was more straight ahead jazz. You know, my mother would kind of mix it up with, you know, blues and R&B, but my father, he was more jazz. You know, when he put his stuff on, it's like, you know, Stanley Turrentine and Gene Ammons and, you know, along with the other Coltrane and Miles and Cannonball Adderley and Art Blakey and all those. So I grew up listening to good jazz. I mean, that was the foundation.
Okay. So now, before they suggested that you and your brother play saxophone, were there any instruments or, you know, that spoke to you before they made that suggestion? Was it something that was, like, speaking to you as you were listening to this music as you were growing up?
No, that was the first. That suggestion was something that sounded good, and I said, I think I'd like to do that. So that was really the initial push right there.
Okay, so how did you start doing that? When did you start playing?
I started in junior high school at Horace Mann. I was playing in the school band and orchestra. And I really dug it. It's like, you know, I was playing the horn. And I played it all through junior high school, you know, in the band and in the orchestra. And I started playing in little groups with friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And moved on to high school. I continued. And high school, I didn't play as much in the school band and orchestra. I was more playing with little combos, groups, you know, with friends of mine and my brother. But for some reason, I was comfortable. I loved playing the horn in a band and orchestra setting, but I never was crazy about standing at the front of the stage. So when I was playing in little small groups, I really wasn't that comfortable standing up there at the front of the stage with the horn, because I was kind of a shy kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was in my senior year, we had a rehearsal, a band rehearsal, you know, some friends. And during the break, I just sat down behind the drums. And I could play like a little simple beat, you know, boom, boom, check, boom, boom, check.
Right.
The coordination was there, you know, just mm-hmm. to play something simple. And then, you know, this light went off in my head, and it said, if you played this instrument, you wouldn't have to stand at the front of the stage anymore. And that did
okay.
it. That did
it. That's all you needed, huh?
Yeah. From that moment, if that's all that was in my head. I want to play drums.
Well, now, that's a great story. But let me ask you this. What, in your band, when you were still playing the saxophone, you guys played around in little small parties and nightclubs. Do you remember some of the local nightclubs that you played? I'm assuming it was in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. We played places like the York Club. I don't know if you remember that. The California Club. The 5-4 Ballroom.
Oh, okay. All right. 5-4 Ballroom. Remember that one.
I'm trying to think. There was some clubs over sort of on the east side. There was the Tiki Room.
Oh, yeah. I remember the Tiki Room. So you guys were on that circuit, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And then there were, you know, some clubs out in Hollywood. Well, actually, that came later when I was playing drums. But yeah, when I was playing the horn, it was more parties and, you know, certain clubs around.
Okay. Now,
yeah.
Let me see. Now, did you play it? According to my research, it says that Brad Pye was in one of your groups.
Yep, a good friend of mine. We call him Brad Pye. His real name is Brad Pierce. I met him when I was in high school. I had switched to drums by the time I met Brad. But Brad Pierce, Rudy Copeland, Vance Tenort, Keith Ivey, my brother J.R., we call him J.R., that's who I was playing with when I was playing the horn in the bands.
So I asked you about Brad Pye because seems like he was a disc jockey or something. Somebody
there was somebody, Brad Pye Jr.
Yeah, Brad Pye Jr. And that was he a disc jockey?
He was. I can't remember exactly what he was. I think he was some type of radio personality, but it's not the same Brad Pye.
Okay,
I know
okay.
who you're talking about because right. I definitely
I
remember.
Mm-hmm. I saw that name. I said, oh, for real? Because I remember that name and being associated with the radio for sure. Okay,
yeah.
So you found a way to get away from the front of the stage and get in the back of the stage and still be on stage and still be a very important, because, you know, without the drums, as far as I'm concerned, you must have the drums and you must have the bass. So after you started after you started playing the drums, then how did that feel to you? It was like, okay, you know, was it like an epiphany, like, okay, this is what I'm going to do from now on. I have found my calling.
That's exactly what it was. I just became possessed because after that day that I sat down behind the drums, I mean, that evening when I went home, I told my father, you know, I said, Pop, I want to switch. I want to play drums now. And he looked at me and he said, well, he says, I bought you your saxophone. He says, if you really want to play drums, get you a little part-time job and buy you a drum set.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay. So a friend of mine, this is just unreal. When I was in high school, one of my best friends, his first name was Robin also, and his last name was Ross. So we both had the same initials, Robin Russell, Robin Ross. Well, Robin's mother worked at the big library downtown, and she got him a part-time job there. And I told him, you know, after what Pop told me, I said, man, can you talk to your mother and see if she can get me in? Because I'm on a job so I can get some drums. So he talked to his mother, and while I was in high school, I got this part-time job working at the big library downtown. And I was able to buy my first drum set before I graduated from high school.
All right.
So
that, and then did you get the library?
I was there for maybe a year. And while in high school, I would come home, do my homework, and go in the garage and stay, just me and my drums, every night. My mother would have to come out and make me stop, because that's where I was. It was just woodshedding. I would put on records and play along with them. And then sometimes I would just take the records off and just play. But I would do that every night when I would come home from school. And my mother, if she wouldn't have come out and stopped me, I probably would have gone into the wee hours, and neighbors would have been yelling and hollering. And it's like, but that was my routine. Come home, do my homework, go in the garage, and just stay.
And study and be diligent about what it was you were trying to do. Call that woodshedding, you know what I'm saying? Just in there, just studying is what it really was.
Yeah, and I was pretty devoted to it. I mean, so much to the point where I didn't even go to my high school prom because I wanted to practice. It's like, I don't want to go to the prom. I want to play my drum.
I don't have time for that shit. You said, I don't have time for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I was pretty dedicated.
All right. Well, see, that's something that I'm glad to hear because, you know, that's what it takes. That's exactly what it takes. It takes that kind of dedication. And you know, more or less kind of started just a little late, you know what I'm saying? Usually when people have a passion for an instrument, you know, a lot of times it starts, you know, way before you got started on those drums. But when you got started, it was like that was it for you, and you did exactly what it took to master
those drums
because that's what you have done. You have mastered the drums, okay? So now we have some calls on the line, but before we take a call, you mentioned that Billy Cobham was one of your idols, I guess. You really listened to him. He was one of the people that you were initially influenced by. And so so one of the songs you submitted as one of your favorite songs is a song called The Red Baron with Billy Cobham And who else was that?
George Duke.
So tell me why you submitted this song.
That song, when Mr. Cobham first did it, it was on his Spectrum album, which came out probably around 74, which is when, you know, that was like the high rolling years for New Birth. And I had known about Billy Cobham from my mother's collection because he played on a lot of the earlier Horace Silver albums and that Blue Note jazz series. So I knew of him. And then when he got with the Mahavishnu Orchestra, which was just straight out fusion rock jazz, they were just the baddest group on the earth. God, the Mahavishnu Orchestra. And, you know, they were all just masters. And that's when I just really started listening to them a whole lot. And when he came out with his solo album, The Red Baron is one of the tunes on there. And it's just that song just has, it just feels so good. It's like, and, you know, it came from a drummer, and to me it sounds like it, you know, because the way he plays and the way it's arranged, and it's just one of those songs that it just hits me deep. It's just got that thing about it.
Okay, well, then we're going to listen to that thing that you're talking about as we listen to the Red Baron, Billy Cobham, and featuring George Duke. Here we go.
All right. Bam. Thank you.
That's it.
Yeah.
Now, see, that's some deepness right there.
Yeah.
That's some deepness right there. And I, just as a side note, I want to say that next week on the show, I'm going to be featuring Wayne Cobham, Billy's brother. So that
really?
Might be one. Yeah, that might be one you might want to listen to. And so back to tonight. We have a caller that's been patiently waiting. Area code 323-309. Caller, are you there?
Oh, hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, is this the Chocolate and Robin? It is Scott Galloway calling in.
Hey, Scott, how's it going?
How are you guys doing?
We are having
good,
fun.
And you?
I'm good. The show has been really good, and I just wanted to call in and share some love with you, man, and congratulate you first off for being on the show with Chocolate. This is like two legendary, awesome folks of funk.
Well, thank you.
I'm just grooving, listening on the show. And the main thing I wanted to do, because I didn't want to take up too much time, but I wanted to let people know that, you know, a lot of people know me as a music journalist, but I am also a drummer. And when I was coming up, there were several R&B drummers that I really, really dug. I loved Steve Ferroni, you know, I loved Jerome Braley, and, you know, several other folks. But what people need to understand about Robin Russell, my boy, my friend, my brother, is that he is a master of dynamics. So when I mean, a lot of people would probably point to something of Robin's, like "Got to Get a Nut" by New Birth or something, which mm-hmm. you know he's really driving fast, or I can understand it, you know what I mean, and he's just cooking and he's bringing it down and breaking it down, and those are all incredible performances. But the real mark of a drummer that is just really masterful is when you listen to a ballad like "It's Been a Long Time" or "Dream Merchant," okay. and you listen to the way that brother brings things down to a whisper, soft, and his drum rolls, the fills that he uses to build things back up. I mean, he's got the whole group in the palm of his hands, and he is controlling things. So I just wanted to call in and say that, you know, I know a lot of people are like, you know, "Wow, man, Robin Russell, that's a bad brother. I remember him. I remember listening to him on all that upbeat, funky stuff from New Birth and whatnot." But, man, go back and listen to the way the drums were played by Robin Russell on them ballads, and you will truly understand that this man is a sensitive master of rhythm and music. That's the main thing
and
I want to say.
What, Scott?
Well,
and
thank
you,
Scott, you so
I
much.
I want to say that as a singer, that is so important, because there's nothing worse than, you know, having to sing in front of a band that does not understand dynamics from a singer's point of view.
That's
that
right.
That is crucial.
Nope.
That is crucial. And also,
that's
I want
right.
to say, I've been for you, Scott, that I would not be having this interview with Robin, because you hooked us up. And I want to thank you very much for that, my brother. And thank you for tuning in. And thank you for continuing to support me.
I would not have missed tonight for anything. And I will always continue to tune into you, Chocolate. I love that you're doing this show, shedding light on these legendary yet unsung musicians that really deserve the light. So much love to you, my sister, and Brother Robin. You and I talk all the time. You know I love you. I'm so glad you're doing this show. So go ahead and break some more history and science off for the people, and I got your back forever.
Okay.
All right, bro.
Thank you.
I appreciate
all right.
it. Love you, too.
All right, y'all.
You
have
too.
A great show.
You, too.
All right. Thank you.
And a great first weekend of summer.
That's
oh,
right.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's true.
All right. Peace and love.
All right.
Robin Scott said that he has your back forever. Now, that's a long time, isn't it?
I appreciate that. He's such a good brother. Such a good friend.
He really is. And so, okay, we left off at the, like around when you didn't go to your high school prom because you were busy in the garage practicing. So you went on to go to the LACC, and you were jamming with a bunch of people, and you were drumming with someone in particular, Rosa Lee Brooks. Now, I know that, and you refer to her as your musical godmother, and I know about her through my good friend Stozo, who turned me on to her. She was like, I don't know if she was Jimmy's girlfriend, or, but I know that she did record with him in his early years. That they did a track or two together. Is that correct?
That is correct. They did a tune called My Diary and UT. Yes, and that was before Jimmy, you know, skyrocketed into stardom. And that's a big part of Rose's history. And yes, she is like my musical godmother, because
now,
I met her.
That?
Well, I met Rose when I was probably 17 or so, because she lives right around the corner from my parents. So, you know, as a teenager, you know, when I had first started playing drums, at one point I didn't have a car, so I would walk from this friend's house to another. But I would always have a pair of drumsticks with me. And one day I was walking down the street, and Rose, I guess her band was about to rehearse, and she saw me, and she could tell I was a musician because of the way I was dressed. And, you know, we just kind of talked for a minute or two, and, you know, I told her I played drums, and somehow or another, I don't know if it was that day or shortly soon thereafter, I brought my drums over her house. And that's when we started to gel. And I would, that was a place where I could just go and hang out, because she had her band, and she was always listening to good music. And, you know, I was still a teenager. And, you know, I learned a lot just from being around her and, you know, watching her band rehearsing and this, and seeing how she carries on. So she just was always in that place for me. That's why I consider her my musical godmother.
Okay, well, was this group called the Magic Mushroom?
Magic Mushroom. Oh, boy, that was a good one there. It was two friends of mine, two Kennys. Kenny McClinton was the guitar player. Kenny Bird was the bass player. We were like a spinoff. All we did was, back then, we called it acid rock. So we were playing this. It was either Jimi Hendrix material or Cream, or our originals. But it was all like acid rock. And
okay.
We, the guitar player, because at that time, Jimi Hendrix was just still such a big influence. It just wasn't too long after his death, maybe a year after. And, you know, the impact of him was just still so strong, and we had our little trio, and we used to, I mean, carry it on. It's like, you know, rocking it, you know, acid style. that's what we used to call it.
I heard that. So that brings me to another song that you submitted, called Rainy Day, which is by Jimi Hendrix. And I guess the reason why you chose this song is for all the reasons you just got through stating just then. It's like you were totally into Jimmy, and you were carrying that torch on and you guys were rocking it out, right?
That's right. And I,
Jimi Hendrix
died. I remember clearly the day that he died because he was one of my biggest idols. And
okay.
When he died, that was shortly after I had started playing drums. My biggest dream at that time was to play drums with Jimi Hendrix. That was
uh-huh.
my dream. And when he died, I was heartbroken.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I never will forget it, because I was getting ready to go to school that morning, and I turned on the radio, and they said Jimi Hendrix died. And I was heartbroken. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, so that's who I've been working to play with. That's who I want to play with.
Okay.
So, and I don't know.
You,
I think
you carried on that torch anyway, though.
That's right. And I think I was just drawn to guitar players because I loved him so much. And
mm-hmm.
and I was just drawn. And especially if somebody had really studied him and just, and like this guy, Kenny McClinton. I mean, we had our originals, but he could play a Jimi Hendrix song, like, I want to say note for note. I'm sure, you know, it wasn't exactly, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, it was
yeah,
so
I know
close.
Exactly
you
what
would, you're
yeah,
you know, it's like
that vibe was definitely there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay. So you ready?
Yeah, and this
to, go ahead.
This particular song, "Rainy Day." The
mm-hmm.
other focus on this song, one of my other idols, Buddy Miles, is playing drums on this song. And
okay.
in this song, he shows you the power of simplicity. Listen to what he plays. He plays this one groove all the way through this song, but it just builds. It just builds all the way to the end, and he sticks right there. So powerful, so powerful. This
well,
song.
Well, you know, he was a master at doing that, Buddy Miles. He was a master at doing that. So
absolutely.
Here we go. Yes, absolutely. Here we go. Rainy Day.
All right.
Just let it groove its own way. Let it drain the worries away. Lay back and groove on a rainy day. Lay back and dream on a rainy day. Lay back and groove.
Jimi Hendrix, that was the first time I had ever heard that one. That was excellent. And this would be a very good time for me to answer a call. Area code 305-405-490.
Okay.
You there?
Hey, what's going on there? It sounds like somebody said 305 up in the house.
305. So, listen, Robert, I would like to introduce you to my brother and partner in Funkism. This is Stozo the Clown, a.k.a. many other things, but we'll just stick to Stozo for right now. And the reason why this is the perfect time to introduce him is because he, Stozo, turned me on and tried to hook me up with, he did actually hook me up with Rosa because I was trying to get her on the show. So this is a good time for you to, talk about that, Jimmy and Rosa.
Okay.
How you doing, Rob? It's all good,
good
Rob.
Good.
Yeah. I'm Stozo the Clown, and I, I used to hitchhike on the mothership with George Clinton and P-Funk. I was out there, just out of high school, and I was hitchhiking one day, and then this spaceship said, "Oh, we'll pick that little kid up," and it was George Clinton and P-Funk All Stars. And then, I started doing a lot of record covers and stuff back in the day for a lot of big groups, Zap and Funkadelic and lots of them. But the big thing was that I used to love the music of all the groups. And I was listening to everything that was funky that was coming along. Patrice could tell you because I was right on their train too. After the mothership dropped me off for a few miles, and I saw a train that slowed down and said, "Let's pick this clown up and let him take a ride with us for a little while." But then we ran into this egg for some reason, this big old giant egg. And I guess it was the cover of the New Birth album cover, which was so unique. I always, as an album cover designer, back in the 70s, doing all these covers, that was a photograph type album, and it still had all the little funky concept and jokes. You guys were a cartoonish kind of group, so that was a big appeal to me too, all the little jokes that you guys would have in the songs. But all of that, Rob, was on top of this beat, though, that was going on in the background. And then, speaking of Jimi Hendrix or anybody, that beat just had me have an experience, man, that what did Jimmy say? Are you experienced?
That's right.
Well, you don't have an experience with the drums, Rob, unless somebody hears some of your stuff. And I would say it another way, but we're on the radio. But this, right, Patrice? I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, anyway, it's an honor to finally meet the guy who was doing all those funky beats, because I'm a bit of a drummer myself with music, and I also do music. And I always learned a lot from the beats. From the New Birth songs, because they were very unique and they were very cartoonish. And since I'm a clown and a cartoon character myself, those beats were right up my alley. I was like, whoa.
okay. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
I know we appreciate you too, man.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Now, the thing that Rosa was talking about, the thing that Patrice was talking about Rosa, Rosa is awesome, and I'm a big Jimi Hendrix fan. I love the music you just played, Rob. And I know you guys haven't really started talking about New Birth yet, but I had a question, though, that I did want to ask you that might be a little before what you guys might talk about, but it's a thing about the drum machine. Now, Patrice Chocolate Banks is the master of the funk box. And, Fly Stone had that funk box going on in, what was it, There's a Ride Going On, and that was exciting. And how did you feel as a drummer, like, in general, with the electronic stuff coming along and the drum machines and all that? What did you think about that when it started coming, As a drummer, you are.
As a drummer, my honest feeling, I was never – really impressed with electronics. I know there's a place for them, but me, as far as what I hear, I like real drums. I mean, wood. It's like
me
the
too,
wood.
Me too.
You know, that you cannot, you can't duplicate that. And, you know, I think that's part of why I am the way I am. It's the sound of the drums that inspires me. When, you know, when my drums sound good, I can just play them for hours and hours and hours.
Well, I think that the ambulance is going to come get you in a second. Sorry about that, folks. Hold on.
Okay.
If you guys need
yeah.
that. But go ahead.
Yeah, you know,
so
there's
he,
a place.
Did he answer your question, Sozo?
Yeah, he did. He did. He sure did. I mean, I can probably understand a lot of what he's saying because I love the real drums too, and there's nothing like that sound, Patrice. And even though there are some fun things, ain't nothing like the funk box either now, Chocolate. But the drums is just awesome. Yeah, he answered.
Yeah,
he knows it. He knows it.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you so much, my brother, for calling in. You never let me down. You always have some interesting questions for my guests and some insightful information. So I appreciate you, and hopefully you'll hang on for the rest of the show.
Absolutely. I'm going back to school. Rob, thanks a lot, Russell. It'll be good to hear more from you in the near future, man. Take care and keep doing what you've been doing to all of us, man. Thanks a lot, Patrice.
All right.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You take it easy.
Okay. You guys keep it funky.
All right.
No, we don't do that. Okay. So now, Robin, so you were playing with the Magic Mushroom, and then you were playing with different bands, too, and I'm seeing here where we're saying that at a time played with Blackbird, McKnight, and Larry Burns, Carl Suttles, people like that in different R&B, rock, and blues bands. But also during this period, you gigged with and also trained under Johnny Guitar Watson. So how did that happen? How did you get hooked up with Johnny Guitar Watson, who is
okay.
one of my favorites, by the way?
That's right. With Johnny Guitar Watson, that happened. I was playing at this club out in Hollywood. Actually, at that time, it was called PJ's, and it later became the Starwood. It was like on Crescent Heights and Santa Monica. Nice, big, Hollywood club.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So one of the managers there, the guy's name is Bob White. In fact, if you look on an old Richard Pryor album, I think it's the Craps album where they're standing around the pool table, Bob White is the guy with the brim, the stingy brim. But anyway, Bob White was the manager, and we had been playing there off and on. And one night he came up to me. He said, you know what, people, I get a lot of compliments on your drumming. Well, I said, oh, okay, thank you. And he said, well, a friend of mine is looking for a drummer. And I said, who? And he said, Johnny Guitar Watson. And I'm like, Johnny Guitar Watson? Because I knew who he was.
Right.
Because he was, at that time, he didn't have any hits out. But he had, you know, a few years ago. And I saw him performing, because our little band played at this thing called the Soul Search. This radio station used to put on this talent show. And they'd have local talent. And then they'd have, you know, a star headlining the show. Well, Johnny Guitar Watson was the headliner. So I got to see him, and it was just fantastic. So I knew who he was, and I'm like, Johnny Guitar Watson? You're kidding. So he says, are you interested? And I said, yeah. So he gave me Johnny's number, and I called Johnny, told him Bob White, mentioned this, and he said, can you bring your drums over? I said, yeah, I'll bring them over. So I was all excited. And
I know you were.
So I took my drums over to Johnny's house. It was just he and I. We played for a couple of hours. I mean, we just went at it. Just, you know, nothing rehearsed. Let's just play a couple of hours. And he was like grinning from cheek to cheek, and I was just having a ball. I'm like, goodness, I'm playing with Johnny Guitar Watson, and I'm having fun. And then, and he was just all into it. He told me, he said, because then I guess I was 17 or 18.
17, get out of here.
And he told me, he said, you know, you're still wet behind the ears, but you play like you've been on this earth for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was just very happy with my drumming. And this is before I even started studying. I mean, but at that point I was self-taught, and I didn't
right.
know any rudiments or anything, but I was good.
Right,
so,
it was a gift. Okay,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so we just started doing gigs around, and it was so much fun, and it was so educational playing with him. Johnny Guitar Watson was such a musical genius. A lot of people don't realize it. And his main instrument was keyboards.
Mm-hmm.
Sit him down behind the keyboards, look out. He could sit next to Chick Corea, Herbie Hancock, name it, just anybody. He had those
right.
kind of chops. I
right.
mean, he could run 30-second notes down that ivory like it was nothing, just runs. I mean, jazz. He could play jazz. I mean, an accomplished jazz musician. And he told me, he said, I like playing the guitar. And he was like the opposite of me. He said, because I get to stand out at the front of the stage. I said, oh. I said, okay. But I learned so much from him. And I consider him my musical godfather.
All right.
That first time around, it was during the year that I started studying drums at LACC. But every time I would rehearse with him, because certain things he would tell me, you know, he'd say, "No, Rob, do it this way. Let me hear this, or let me hear that," and I would listen to him. It's like he knows what he's talking about,
mm-hmm.
and it was just very educational. And he was just, I've never met anybody that had such a sense of humor. I mean, he could have easily been a stand-up comedian.
Mm-hmm.
He was like on top of everything that's going on in the world. And it,
yes,
it even,
he sure was, because I listened to his music. He talked about everything.
Yeah, he was on top of what was going on in the world, and will come out in his music. So that was such a blessing and such an honor to work with him. You know, I worked
with
him.
How long did you work with him?
At that point, I worked with him through my semester at LACC. I worked with him two more times in his career. It was later in the 80s. No, the late 70s and then the 80s. But this first time around, because we used to have so much fun, we would do gigs before hours and after hours.
Mm-hmm.
And after I had been there, I brought in, he asked me about a bass player. I brought my friend Kenny Bird from Magic Mushroom, and later he asked me if I knew a keyboard player. And I brought my friend Rudy Copeland, who was blind. Rudy, you know, it's like it goes Ray Charles, Stevie Wonder, and then Rudy Copeland. When I introduced Johnny to Rudy, John just fell in love with Rudy's playing, because Rudy's just an absolute genius. He
mm-hmm.
sat down, he was playing this B3, you know, we're the same age, and here he is playing like Jimmy Smith and Jack McDuff. It's like, unbelievable.
Teenager.
So he had this young group that actually I put the rhythm section together. It was my friends. And he just loved it. He was in seventh heaven. So that, I played with him, that was about a year. And then this is the start of another part of the story.
Right.
One night we were doing a gig at the York Club, and Little Richard came in. Johnny and Richard were friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we sat there and did our set, and we go back in the dressing room, and Richard comes back in the dressing room, and the first thing he says, "I want you to be my drummer." And I looked at him, and I'm like, I said, "Oh, he's pulling my leg." I said, "That's Little Richard. Wants me to be his drummer? No." I said, "He's pulling my leg." And he said he was getting ready to go on tour, because Johnny had worked with him before, had played behind him. And he asked Johnny if he wanted to do the tour. At that point, Johnny said, "Yeah." And he told me, he said, "I want you to be my drummer." And I still didn't believe him. You know, he said, "You know, give me your phone number and I'm going to call you." So I gave him the number. And I went on. I said, "You know, he's not going to call me." The next morning, the phone rang. It was Richard. I said, "I'll be doggone." He called. And he said, "You know, we're going to leave in a couple of weeks. And I want, you know, I just want to, you know, get you familiar with what we're doing, meet the musical director." And he said, "You know, can I send somebody to pick you up?" And I'm sitting here, my mouth, my jaw is down to the floor.
Okay.
I'm like, Little Richard is on the phone talking about doing these gigs. And so sure enough, I said, "Yeah, you know, I'll be ready." About an hour later, the doorbell rings, and it's this big, long limousine. Now, here, I'm still a teenager.
This is what I'm saying. This is what's blowing my mind. Because at this point, you're about 19, right?
Yep, 18, 19.
Okay. 18, 19. So now you have played with Johnny Guitar Watson, who is a master. And now calling you, he's the architect of rock and roll, and all this is happening
right
to you before you are 20 years old. I mean, you know, how much better than that does it get? And I know that you could not believe that this was happening to you. So what did it feel like? Because I know Johnny Guitar Watson played to as large of audiences as Little Richard probably did. Am I correct?
Right. It wasn't with Johnny, it was more nightclubs. You know, it was all, you know, nightclubs, little halls and things like that.
Right.
But
so
with
how did
Richard,
it feel to be on that level with Richard, to be in front of those kind of crowds that I know? Because it says that you guys did the London Rock and Roll Show, and it was filmed at the Wembley Stadium, and this was in 1972. So I knew it had to be thousands of people there. So how could that make a 19-year-old feel?
It blew my mind. The whole time, it felt like a dream. I could not believe it. As it turns out, Johnny decided not to do the tour, but
uh-huh.
he told me, he said, "You go ahead and do it. It will be good for you." So it felt like a dream. And the first gig we did, it was like a warm-up. We played at the Wilton Theater here. The second gig was at Madison Square Garden in New York.
Mm.
The third gig was Wembley Stadium, London.
Wow.
And that concert, I couldn't believe it. You know, it was on the show was Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, Bill Haley and the Comets. Who did I say? Yeah, I think I got them all. But
all
that show, at Wembley Stadium, I never will forget it, because we walked out on stage, the sun was about to set, and I looked out in the audience. The whole playing field was full of people, and the stands completely filled. And I couldn't believe it. I said, am I actually here?
Okay.
I couldn't believe it. You know,
wow.
I was 19.
I know. That's what's so mind-blowing about the whole thing is how young you were.
Yeah. You know, I didn't think that those kind of gigs would come for me until I was 30. That's what I used to think when I was in the garage practicing. I would be practicing, and I would envision myself playing at big concerts and stuff. You know, it's just me there in the garage, and I'm acting like I'm playing in front of thousands of people. And I said, oh, it'll, by the time I'm 30, it should happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened much sooner.
So
and
that
it,
shows
it
you that
was,
there's always a plan. It may not be the plan that you have in mind, but in the meantime, while you were out in that garage, you were getting yourself ready for a plan that you did not even know about. And guess what? You were ready. At 19, 17, 18, and 19, you were ready to play with the, you know, with the legends. So we could talk about, you know, that's so interesting to me. I could stay on that subject all night, but we're going to move on. Because after you return back to the USA, that's when you audition for a group called New Birth / Nightlighters?
And the Nightlighters. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so tell me about how that happened. And then we have another caller. Caller, I want you to know I see you, and I'm coming. I'll be there in a minute. But we got to hear about this New Birth, how this thing happened.
Okay, how this happened, it was Magic Mushroom. We were playing, I got back off the road with Richard, and Richard decided he's going to go into religion. So I knew, it's like, okay. So anyway, I hooked up with my friends, Kenny and Kenny, and we were playing at the Watts Festival, okay? There we were in the middle of Watts, playing this acid rock music, and people were loving it. And when we came off the stage, I come to the foot of the stage, and there's this guy standing there. I didn't know him, and he was like, brother, who are you? What's your name? This and that. You know, I told him, and he told me his name was Matthew. He was a drummer. He plays with this group called Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign, who at that time, Wayne Henderson was producing them. They were from Indianapolis, Indiana, and they were good friends with the Nightlighters and New Birth. So Matthew and I, he loved Magic Mushroom, and he loved what we were doing, and he loved my drumming, and I got to, you know, hear his band, and he was a monster drummer. And one day he said, you know, some friends of mine are looking for a drummer. And I said, who? And he said, New Birth and the Nightlighters. And at that point, I had not heard of New Birth, but I knew who the Nightlighters were. And I said, the Nightlighters? I said, man, those guys are like Chicago. I mean, that's a bad group. You think I'm good enough to play with them? And he looked at me, he's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, Matthew, I said, I know about the Nightlighters. And he said, look, I want you to go up to that house, because they were living in a band house right below the Hollywood sign, up in the Hollywood Hills.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, I want you to, you should go up there and audition. So I think it was maybe a week later, and I was going up to the audition, and I'm going to get off the track and come right back. The day of the audition, I stopped by Rose's house. Charles Love, who used to recently pass, of Bloodstone, used to live right across the street from Rose. They took a picture for the album cover for the Natural High album. On the back of that album, you'll see me, Rose, all of Bloodstone. That day was the day I left from that photo shoot and went up and auditioned for New Birth.
Okay.
So I got up to the house, and Baker, James Baker, who's the trombone player, he also plays drums. They said, we're going to let Baker play drums, let you listen to him play one set, and then you play it. So Baker played the set, and then they said, okay, now you sit down and do it. And somehow, I don't know how, but I played this set, no mistakes. I mean, their songs had breaks in them and this and that, and I don't know how I did it, but I played the set, you know, it was like flawless, and we hit the last note, you know, and Baker looked at me, and he said, the gig is yours if you want it. And I'm like,
now,
are you kidding?
Okay,
the Nightlighters.
Now, let me ask you about that, because the Nightlighters, I'm just learning about them. So the Nightlighters and New Birth, so the Nightlighters, they were the band, and New Birth were the was the singing group? Is that how that went?
In the beginning, yes. They were separate. The Nightlighters were the instrumental group, and the Nightlighters, you know, had a couple of hits. KG was a real big hit. Afro Strut, and they also used to back up a lot of the Motown artists because the manager, Harvey Fuqua, who was all into Motown and a big part of Motown.
Right.
So this was before I had gotten with them. They had worked behind a lot of the Motown acts. You know, the Nightlighters were just known. So I was just honored. It's like, wow, the Nightlighters. In the beginning, they were separate.
Okay.
So
that's something new that I learned. So they were out of Detroit.
Basically, the Nightlighters were from Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
Most of the instrumentalists in New Birth were from Louisville, Kentucky. They were the Nightlighters. And the vocalists were from Detroit.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So now on your list you submitted, the New Birth song you submitted is Keep Doing It. So what is it about?
Keep on
that
doing
song?
It.
Keep on doing it. So out of that song, out of all the songs they did, what is it about that one that you submitted? That one.
That song, the reason it's special to me, because there was a drum beat that I was hearing. It was something that came into my head where I wanted to play a pattern where the hi-hat wasn't, I mean, just the normal. I just wanted to break up the pattern and make some kind of a unique pattern. And I kept hearing this thing, and one day, you know, it came to me. The idea was there. I didn't know how it was going to sound, but one day I just sat down and I was in that zone, and this groove came to me. And the hi-hat is what I wanted. It was not just like straight on the hi-hat. So when I found a song that we were recording where I could fit that in, I was just floored. It's like I found a place for it. So
this song, Keep On Doing It, was that song?
Yes, that song, after the intro, you go in, you listen to the hi-hat. And you know, it's something, it's just a special little groove.
Okay,
and I love the way. Okay.
And you love the way? Yeah, and so
I love the way Leslie sings, the lead vocalist. Leslie's vocalist And the guitar, we had added another guitar player, Carl McDaniels, and his guitar playing on here is just, oh, he's just it's like taking you for a ride.
Okay.
You know, he just
well, let's go
takes
on this
you.
Ride. Let's go on this
okay.
ride while y'all keep on doing it. Here we go. And listen
all
for
right.
that hi-hat, you guys. Listen for that hi-hat. Here we go. Okay, you got me messed up now, because every time I hear that song, I'm just going to be only listening for the hi-hat.
Oh,
From now on, it's going to be all about the hi-hat. So we have another caller. We have another caller.
Okay.
Caller, if you're still there, area code 816. If you're still there, 816.
Hello.
Hi.
Good evening.
Hello. Can you hear?
Yes.
Oh, hi. So, chocolate?
Yes.
Okay.
Is it Barry?
Barry Jack.
Oh, what's going on, Barry? I was having a little problem hearing you there. You know Robin Russell?
No, and it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure and an honor to meet Mr. Russell.
Okay, let me introduce you to him. Robin, this is Barry Jackson, who is a very good friend of mine out of Kansas City. He's a disc jockey slash all kinds of stuff. So
all right.
We don't even have time to go into all that, so I'm going to let him go ahead on and ask you what he has to ask you tonight.
Well, and good evening, Mr. Russell. How you doing?
Good, and you? Thank you.
Doing fine. I just have to let you know one thing for sure. The bands in Kansas City, especially the funk bands that came out in the 70s, we had to make sure that tunes like Wildflower and Got to Get a Nut were part of the playlist.
Okay.
You know, it was about as necessary as having something by Bloodstone. Hence part
okay.
of the You know,
all
they're
right.
homeboys. They're homeboys, and it's funny you mentioned Bloodstone earlier.
Yeah,
their last CD, they had nothing but Kansas City musicians on that album. It was
okay.
They always came to reach back. So,
That's good.
They just put one out. I even got to blow four notes on it. So,
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, they're probably the most important four notes of my 47-year career. So, but,
all
well,
right.
They're recorded. It's part of history now. So,
okay, you're in there.
I want to tell Barry, let me just say this to Robin. I want to tell Robin that Barry inboxed me on Facebook and told me that I should listen because I wasn't familiar with Got to Get a Nut and to listen to that one. And I did.
Uh-huh.
And for everybody who has not heard, maybe I might be the only one in the world that hasn't heard that song, but check out Got to Get a Nut. The drumming that Robin is doing on that song is insane. That's insanity. I just want to let you know that, Rob. Insanity. So check that out. Everybody check that out. Okay, Barry, thank you for turning me on to that too, Barry. So
sure. Well, and the point, and to that point, I wanted to mention that, the drummer that played with me in a band here in Kansas City, you know, he was the one, he insisted that we learn that song. You know,
mm-hmm.
so he could shine. He really listened to Alonzo Scooter Powell. Really listened to you.
Okay.
You know, he's out there now. In fact, he plays with James Ingram, Bruce Conte, formerly of Tower of Power, when he's in town, and what have you.
What's his name again?
Alonzo Powell, nicknamed Scooter.
Okay, I've heard of him.
Played for several years with Norman Brown when Norman first came out to the coast.
Okay.
But let me ask you, because I got in on this kind of a little late. I got on just before Stozo was able to call in. But
mm-hmm.
I wanted to know. I don't know if it was discussed or not. But what drummers did you listen to? Who were the most influential drummers on your playing style?
Well, I'll start. I can break it down because I have many. I mean. Because I used to listen to so many different styles of music. But, you know, I'll start, like, with big bands, like Buddy Rich, Louie Belson, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then if we go to jazz, straight ahead, there's Elvin Jones, Tony Williams,
yeah.
Art Blakey, you know, that kind. And we go to rock, there was John Bonham from Led Zeppelin,
mm-hmm.
Mitch Mitchell with Jimi Hendrix, Buddy Miles, Ginger Baker with Cream. Ginger especially because his roles if you listen to how he rolls around the drums, when I first started playing, Ginger's rolls were just something. I said, I have to learn how to do this. And it's so his, I really got a lot from Ginger Baker as far as rolling around the drums. And that's, you know, there's so many. And God, I could go on and later, you know, later drummers later, of course, my good friend Dennis Chambers, who
yeah.
just changed the face of drumming.
yeah.
He's such
exactly.
a monster. You know, there, God, there's so many. I mean, I have a friend, he passed away a few years ago. His name is Sonship Theus, who I grew up with, and he was a genius as far as drums, jazz player. He played with, you know, a lot of big-name people, McCoy Tyner, John Klimmer, John McLaughlin, you know, a lot of different people. And I grew up with this guy, and we both started off playing saxophone, but he switched to drums while we were in junior high. And when he was 13 years old, I'm not playing, he could play like Art Blakey and Tony Williams and Elvin Jones. He was that good.
Nice.
And so he was a big influence on me. But there are many, you know, and I could go on and on. It's so many.
Well, one name that was left out, I heard we're cutting in and out here for some reason.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
But the reason why I ask, because when I clicked on to the broadcast, I did hear Red Baron. So you know whose name
oh, yeah.
I'm thinking of now.
yeah. Did I mention Billy Cobham?
It's okay. You mentioned Art. You mentioned so many other people that he says has influenced
him. Oh, God.
You know.
I don't know how I could have mentioned him. He's one of the main ones.
yeah, that's my boy. It's just great to be able to talk with you, and it's always a pleasure to talk with Chuck right there. It's about keeping the funk going. So.
That's right. That
you know.
Is right.
But
well, thank
well,
you,
tell
my
me,
brother.
One more question. One more quick one.
Okay.
I'll get off here.
Okay.
who are the young drummers out there that you like?
The young drummers. Okay. I'm. You know, there are a few. I'd say people like Tony Royster. And, okay, people like, I don't know how young you want to go. John Blackwell, John Blackwell.
How about Ron Bruner Jr.?
Ron's a monster. He's just all over the drums. he's a monster.
I got to hear him with George Duke, and I got to hear him in a band that Stanley Clark had, and I understand he's playing somewhere tonight with Marcus Miller.
That doesn't surprise me. And it's funny because I met Ronald's father years and years ago. His father's a drummer.
He is, and I want to say, can I join the conversation right now? I want to say Ron Bruner is a very good friend of mine. We used to work together.
Okay.
So go ahead. Okay, so you get this here because you're my friend, Barry. Go ahead.
Well, no, I'm pretty much done. This is, you know, before I give the appearance of trying to suck all the air out of the room, I'm gonna turn the mic over back to you.
Well, thank you so much, my brother, for calling in.
Yeah.
Usual, I appreciate you, and you know, and your continued support, and I appreciate you.
All right. You take
thank
you
very
both,
much.
You take care. Have a good night.
You too.
Thanks for calling, bro.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. So now, it's 9:30 already, and I'm trying to, so let's do this. because I got a song that I want played too, one of my favorite New Birth songs. But just try to sum up what it was like being with New Birth. I know that it was a completely different genre, you know, that funk genre. I guess you could call it funk, or maybe you guys are more R&B, because you guys did have a lot of hit ballads. So what was it like to be in that group?
It was a good experience, and the thing about our group, there were certain other groups that we would tour with that we became good friends with, quite a few, but to name of the closer ones, like the Ohio Players, P-Funk, we all just used to hang together. I mean, two of my best drumming buddies back in the day was Diamond from the Ohio Players.
Yep,
and
I know
Tiki,
him well.
Yeah, and Tiki Forward, the original drummer from Funkadelic. Those were my two buddies. And there was one other guy named Fats Gallon that used to play with the Dells. But the thing of it is we didn't like to start trouble or anything. We just wanted to go out and have a good time. And, you know, we got to a point where I guess as a group, when you're growing, sometimes you get so good, people don't want to come on after you. Or, you know, so you get moved to the position where you're the headliner and you don't have to go through that. But it was such a good experience for me, and to be in the type of situation where everyone was equal. That's what
right.
I really liked.
Okay.
Because there were a number of occasions where I was approached by different groups. You know, when the group was in the heyday, I remember once the OJs tried to recruit me. And I'm like, well, no, I appreciate the offer, but I said, if I went with you guys, I would be a side man. You know, over here, we're all equal, and we all contribute. So, you know, I kind of like that. So,
I understand.
You know, there were things, and you know, we were in the heyday. It was 12 of us. And we were a tight family. It was, you know, a whole lot of love and respect. And we just used to, magic would come upon us on stage. I mean, we would rehearse. We believed in having our material tight. So our music was tight. But then when you put us on stage and start getting the reaction from the people, you know, that tightness is still there, but then you start loosening things up. And that's when I would – that's one part about being a musician, is when you're in a situation and your audience is just loving it. You know, and they're letting
Absolutely.
You know it.
Right.
You know, and that's where you're like, this is it.
And that makes you feel like it was all worth it, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
Right. That's right.
Okay. So now I have, there's another caller hanging on. Thank you so much for holding on to caller, and we're going to get right to you. But before we do, I have to admit, Rob, that I had to insert one of my all-time favorite New Birth songs
okay.
on the list, okay? And that song is called I Can Understand It. And all I have to say was it is the jam, okay? I Can Understand It. Bam, here we go.
All right.
I know everybody realizes that a man works better when he works out his own bag. Can you understand that? I can understand that. Oh, do it on the right foot, baby. Don't do it on the left foot, baby. Look at here, y'all. Something cool, but not too cold. Girl, you got to give to get you know. Don't put down a man with a better hand. Oh, look at here, y'all. I can understand it.
Hey! I'm over. Baby, I want to do it one more time. That's my song right there. Okay, we're going to go to this next caller right quick because they've been waiting so long. Eric code 419, 419. This is our last caller for tonight. Are you there, 419?
Yes, I am.
All right, who's calling?
This is Jared.
Hi, Jared. I knew that, but, you know, I have to ask who's calling, you know, like I'm surprised. So what questions or comments do you have for Mr. Robin Russell?
Well, I just think that your band was just very underrated. They didn't really get the credit that they deserve. And I was wondering,
okay,
did you guys ever film any concert footage or anything like that? Because there's not a lot of footage of you guys from the 70s. And that'll be my question.
You know, there is some footage that was supposed to have been released. There was a series of concerts we did for Don Kirshner. Remember that? I don't know if you remember this program, Don Kirshner's Rock Concert.
Mm-hmm, Rock Concert, right.
Yeah, well, we signed the papers years ago, and the stuff is, I guess, tied up in some kind of legal situation, but that's a series that should have come out, and I don't know what happened, but there's definitely some material out there that has just not been put out for one reason or another, something like that, because we don't own it, so we just kind of have to hope that someday they'll go ahead and release it.
Or just, you know, go ahead on and keep looking at the same ones that they have, because I know Jared, I think he posted up the same one that I found where you guys were doing this show, and you did, I Can Understand It Live, and then I think it was a couple of more, the Nightlighters did some, they opened up first, and I think that was the only thing that I was able to find live, but it was jamming, y'all was getting all the way down. Is that the one you're talking about, Jared? Did you see that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, you posted that one, didn't you? Yeah.
From Soul, yeah. And there's
right.
A few other clips from Soul Train and stuff like that. There's some of that out on YouTube. But, yeah, I wish they would release those Don Kirshner performances. That was some real good stuff.
Yeah, because they had everybody on Don Kirshner, so I guess we got to start a petition.
Yeah. Yeah, bring it on out.
Yeah, that's right. So, Jared, was that, did you have anything else? Was that it?
Oh, yeah. I had, I think it was Tony Churchill. He had posted about a week or two ago that Charlie Herndon had passed away.
Right. I was sorry to hear that Charlie has passed on, and he was such a good spirit, such a creative person. He will definitely be missed. Little Charlie Herndon, he was something else, something else.
Well, that's why we have to support our legends when they come out and they play. I know from time to time that I believe that New Birth gets together and are still doing little gigs here and there. So, you know, whenever we have a chance to go and support and go see, that's what we need to do. So
that's right.
You know, yeah, absolutely. So, Jared, was that it? You know, I'm gonna give you carte blanche.
Yeah.
You got anything else, or is that it?
That's it.
Well, thanks
for
calling.
All right. Thank
okay,
you.
Jared. Thank you. Talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right. So, Rob. So, I've been trying to. We know that you went on with New Birth. For a while, and you guys were riding high for a long time. And after post-New Birth, you did things. You worked with other people. You worked with Sylvester for a minute. Richard Berry. I got all your stuff here. People can go to your website and find out everything that you've done. But what I am like just so, my mind is blown over. And there's also, because we probably won't have a chance to talk about all of this either, you know, but
mm-hmm.
there's a little documentary of you on YouTube about what you actually do that I think is so awesome. We don't have that much time, but you get up like at 5 o'clock in the morning, or you arrive. There's a park called Griffith Park here in Los Angeles, and I know you've done it in other places too, but you like go to the parks and you like at one with nature, and you play the drums. It's dark when you start playing the drums, and sometimes you play all day long. And could you just, I know that it's probably a real deep reason why you do this, but can you just kind of try to sum it up for us? What is it, you know, that you get out of, and how did you start doing this? Because I think it's awesome, and everybody needs to check out that YouTube clip of him explaining why he does this, and see him playing like at, when it's still dark in the morning. It's just him and his drums out there. So can you just give us a little insight on that?
Okay, well, it's a combination. I love being out in Mother Nature. I love what God has given us, just the earth in its natural form. I mean, being in the trees, being out in the forest with the birds and the squirrels, and just Mother Nature. I just love it. I love being out in Mother Nature. And when you combine that with an instrument that was made originally to be played outdoors, it just, the two just kind of come together. So I used to go, I started playing out in the park, actually in the 70s. I would play by the merry-go-round on Sundays, and it'd be a big crowd. Me and my buddy Vance Mad Dog Tenort, who was with the L.A. Boppers, and he would bring his congas, and we'd have a big crowd. And I did that in the 70s, and then 80s I didn't. And about 12 years ago, I got this urge. I said, I want to start playing out in the mountains and somewhere, but I don't want to do a drum circle. So I loaded up my drums and I went looking for a spot, and I found this spot, and it's just so serene to be able to set up your instrument and just be in a peaceful setting like that. And as I kept doing it, I know I started, when I first started going, I would go maybe 10 o'clock or so. And then I started wondering, well, I wonder what it's like at 8. I wonder what it's like at 7. I wonder what it's like at 6. So then I said, well, let me just come out as early as I can. And the first time I did that, it was so beautiful, I couldn't believe it. And especially during the winter months, because it stays darker longer. It's a little cooler
right
out there. But to set up my drums, especially on a morning where there's like a full moon, to set up and while it's still dark, completely dark, and then start playing and just play as the sun rises, to be a part of that. It's just, that feeling is such a good feeling.
And it's probably something that
instrument.
you really can't describe in words, really, because I'm trying to imagine what that must be like. And I'm sure that words are hard to find to describe that. So are you still doing that now?
Absolutely. I'm going to do it in the morning.
Oh, okay. So you're doing it like on a regular basis? So a drummer or anybody who wants to come see you, they can come. Are you doing it at Griffith Park?
I'm there at Griffith Park, yeah.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
You know, things have, since I've been there, things just kind of evolve. Even what I bring, I mean, over time, when I first started going, I wouldn't bring chairs. But after a while, I said, I want somewhere to sit. And then after a few years, I started losing limbs because I sit under this big oak tree. And the sun was starting to get to me at certain times. So I had to kind of pray on it and think on it. And I started bringing a big umbrella to keep the sun off me. Yeah. I mean, in the back of my van. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, I don't know what it is with the insects, the wasp. When I was a kid, wasps and bees liked flowers and plants. Well, nowadays, they like food. They
people?
Like meat.
Oh.
Yeah. People and your food. So the wasp started getting to me. I said, well, I can't let this ruin my lunch. So now I have this net in the summertime that I put up and hang from the umbrella to keep the insects out. So
right.
In the back of my van, I have a survival kit because I'm out in Mother Nature. And
right.
I'm prepared for anything, for rain, for the cold, for the heat. So I adapt. So the only thing that keeps me from going out there is if it's pouring down rain. But
right.
If it's cold, if it's hot, that's Mother Nature. I want to be out there. If it's foggy.
I heard that. I think that is so awesome. So, what else do you have going? What else do you have to move on? Because now people know that they can go see you out at Griffith Park. Rain, you like the postman. Anything except for pouring down rain, they can go out and check you out, and you are awesome. So what else are you doing? I know you give drum lessons. You're producing. That's a lot right there. So where can we go to find out exactly what all you are doing?
Well, you
like
can
on
always,
the internet?
Yeah. Sometimes on my website I might post something, and a lot of times things just come up and I just do them. I may not put a lot of notification into it. But you know, check my website.
And what is your website? What is your website?
If you just Google my name, that's the easiest way to get there.
Okay.
Just Google.
All right. Google me. That's all you got to do, and you find out everything you need to know. Okay, so what advice would you give to, those who are up and coming, musicians, drummers especially? Let's do drummers. What advice would you give them?
Well, the advice I would give is, you know, if you've made this decision to play this instrument, and hopefully, you know, it's a sincere decision, stay devoted to what you're doing. It's almost like your instrument has become a part of you, and just believe in what you're doing, and believe that you can accomplish anything that you want.
Absolutely.
And if you stick with it, you can. You can and you will.
Okay. And that's sound advice right there, because that has proven to be true so, so many times. Do you have any shout-outs? Want to shout anybody out?
Well, I would just like to say, you know, thank you to everyone for listening. I'd like to say, you know, thank you to my wife and my family, and just the people in general, anyone that's tuned in, and all the New Birth fans and all the drumming fans, and just thank you, everyone.
Okay. Well, this particular show was very anticipated. People were waiting on this show, so this has been a good one, and I thank you very much for joining us. And I would like to say, for all things chocolate, you can go to PatriceChocolateBakes.com, and I would like to thank my family. I would like to thank Team Chocolate, the Funkalutionaries, you know who you are. I would like to thank Beverly Black Johnson, Tribe Family Channel. Who else? I'm trying to make sure I don't forget anybody. I have it written down here because if I forget somebody, I will be in trouble. Okay, here we go. Scott, I want to thank him again for hooking us up. I think I accidentally fooled around and covered everybody. Very good. Okay, so now until next week, may God bless all of you guys. Bless your hearts real good, and may the funk be with you. And on our way out, what we're going to do is we're going to play. I didn't get a chance to play all the songs on Rob's list, so we're going to jam it on out until Blog Talk shuts us down, okay? So in the meantime, you guys stay tuned. And Robin, you are somebody that I admire, and you have a huge new fan in me for you, and I appreciate you so much. And don't surprise if you looked up, because I play a little tiny bit of drums myself, so don't surprise if you look up and I'm standing in front of you. It won't be 5 o'clock in the morning at Griffin Park, okay?
All right.
Okay.
All right.
So,
well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, my brother. And this was a wonderful interview. Such a sweet spirit. And I will hope to talk to you and see you real soon.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. In the meantime, we're about to jam it on out. BBJ, you ready? Live on Tribe. Here we go.
All righty.
Bring her back to me and touch. Would you please, please do me a favor? You should happen to see my baby somewhere. Would you please tell her I'm waiting with open arms? Would you please make my dreams come true?
Baby, 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 baby.
Thank you. honey.
Something I have to tell you first, and it's a long story. You're not a dream, you're not an angel, you're a man. I'm not a queen, I'm a woman. Please take my hand.
could imagine. And many times her eyes fall back to tears, Lord, Lord. And when her useful world was about to fall in, each time a slender shoulder or the weight of all the fears and a sigh of no one here still rings in the night silence in her ears. Let her cry. Possession, I would pick her from the garden, you be mine. Be somewhere around. You see, not only that, you see, I'll be your bridge over troubled waters. You see, the reason why I say this, baby, is because I love you, girl. I love you so much. Oh, sometimes I can't even explain. You see, you're like a flower that blooms in any season. And that's why I like to say, you're my flower, baby. You're my flower. Oh, baby. A flower. You're my flower. Flower. It's you, baby. Oh,
you, baby, baby.